Antaya Madri Ravala Haridas Savaya.
Antaya Madri Ravala Haridas Savaya.
Yadrama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramodaha.
Yadrama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramodaha.
Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayos Tayo Yata.
Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayos Tayo Yata.
Aniyasuya vasakandara kandamulai. Anta.
Anta.
Oh.
Ayam.
Ayam.
This.
Adri.
Adri.
Hill.
Hill.
Avala.
Avala.
Oh, friends.
Oh, friends.
Haridasavaryaha.
Haridasavaryaha.
The best among the servants of the Lord.
The best among the servants of the Lord.
Yat.
Yat.
Because.
Because.
Ramakrishna Charana.
Ramakrishna Charana.
Of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and Balaram. Svadarsha,
by the touch.
Pramodaha,
jubilant.
Manam,
manam,
respect.
Tanoti,
offers.
Saha,
with.
Goganayaho,
the cows, calves, and cowherd boys.
Tayo,
to them.
To them.
Sri Krishna and Balaram.
Sri Krishna and Balaram.
Yat.
Yat.
Because.
Because.
Aniya.
Aniya.
With drinking water.
With drinking water.
Suyavasa.
Suyavasa.
Very soft grass.
Very soft grass.
Kandara.
Kandara.
Caves.
Caves.
Kandamulai.
Kandamulai.
With edible roots. Translation. Of all the devotees, this Govardhan hill is the best. Oh my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respects to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. Purport. This translation is quoted from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 1884. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the opulence of Govardhan Hill as follows. Paniya refers to the fragrant, cool water from the Govardhan waterfalls, which Krishna and Balaram drink and use to wash their feet and mouths. Govardhana also offers other beverages such as honey, mango juice, and pilu juice. Suyavasa indicates durva grass used to make the religious offerings of Arjuna. Govardhan also has grass that is fragrant, soft, and conducive to the strong growth of cows and increased production of milk. Thus, this grass is used for feeding the transcendental herds. Kandara refers to the caves where Krishna, Balaram, and their friends play, sit, and lie down. These caves give pleasure when the weather is too hot or too cold, or when it is raining. Govardhan also features soft roofs for eating, jewels for ornamenting the body, flat places for sitting, and lamps and mirrors in the form of smooth stones, glistening water, and other natural substances. So Govardhan Hill here is then being mentioned by the gopis, that he is the best of all the servants, because he assists the Lord's pastimes in so many wonderful ways. There's many, many nice things that are being offered by Govardhan to enhance the pastimes of Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends and girlfriends. And Govardhan is able to present all of these things. So then, therefore it becomes the focus actually of attention of the pastimes of Vrindavan. We see that when the decision was being made to move from Gokul to Vrindavan, one of the major points was that Govardhan Hill was there and had a lot of very, very wonderful grass on which then the cows could be fed. And being cowherds, then naturally this is an important consideration. So with that in mind, then the cowherd men moved to Vrindavan, because then they could take advantage of Govardhan Hill. Also we see that Krishna's pastimes then with the cowherd boys happens there, and also his most intimate pastimes with the gopis also happen at this place. So Govardhan then becomes very central in the pastimes of Krishna. So then we see that a discussion will come up, and here he is best of devotees. At the same time as we see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is referring to him as Krishna himself. And we also see in the pastimes given in Bhagavatam and the lifting of Govardhan Hill, then we see that Krishna takes the form of Govardhan Hill personified and stands there in a huge form, and he eats all the offerings of the devotees. When Nanda Baba and the cowherd men, they were very busy arranging so many things for the Indra Yajna. They were coming, everybody was moving around and doing so many, bringing many, many nice, wonderful items. Then Krishna inquired, what is going on? What is happening? What is everyone doing? So then, Nanda Baba, basically he's a young boy, you know, so then it's kind of like basic principles. He's a young boy, how he'll understand all these things. But Krishna very cleverly said, you know, you may think I'm a young child, but if you feel that I could understand, then you could explain to me everything, what you're doing, why you're doing it, who's being worshipped, who are the priests who are going to conduct this worship and guide you and everything. And, you know, all these things. Because it is said that for someone who is intimate, then one can reveal all secrets. But for someone who is an enemy, then of course you do not want to say anything. So after speaking so maturely like this, then Nanda Baba, sat down and then picked up Krishna, put him on his lap. At the time, Krishna was only 7. And then started to explain that, you know, for many, many generations, we've been offering this yajna to Lord Indra, because he provides all the nice rain, and by that rain the grass grows and the cows eat it, the cows give milk, and then they are maintained, because as cowherd men, then it's their duty to take care of cows. So then, so after hearing all this explanation, then Krishna, he made the point of why you have to worship Indra. It means it's, you've done work according to your karma, you are going to get the results. It's not some other way. It means if you haven't done good work, then Indra won't give rain. If you've done your work, Indra's given rain. So the actual cause is your work. So he was quoting from one of the Vedic philosophies called Karma Mimamsa, which its central point is that activity is the controller. In other words, your activities is what makes things happen. So basically, since we're doing the activities, it means we're God. So it's one of the bogus philosophies. But for argument's sake, it's a lower philosophy can be used to establish a higher principle. So then he pointed out is he is only doing it because he has to do it. There's no other alternative for him. So you've done the work, so he's giving. Srila Prabhupada points out, though, that the actual point is that even you've done the work, still someone has to be pleased with the work. If you do the work in the wrong attitude, it's not that they have to be pleased and give you the result you're looking for. You get the result because you perform the activity properly, and being pleased, then they are giving. But in this argument, then Krishna is pointing out that he has to anyway give you. He doesn't have another alternate, so you have no need to worship him. And then he points out, anyway, this Govardhan Hill, he's taking care. And he is doing everything for you, so you should just worship him. So by worshiping this Govardhan Hill, then everything will be provided. And like in this verse, he says, all these wonderful things are being provided by Govardhan. So he spoke so sweetly and so logically that Nanda Baba and all the cowherd men, they thought, okay, this is very nice. So then Krishna described that, okay, then you make a very big, you know, hill of grains and make unlimited amounts of sweet rice and other nice things to offer, and fragrant vegetables and all these different things. And you offer that to Govardhan, and being pleased that he will accept the offerings, and then you should feed all the Brahmins very sumptuously until they all start laughing. And that, and then after that, then feed everyone else, right down to the dogs and the chandalas. And then after that, then you circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Then they, you know, keeping the cows in front, then they would go around. So the cowherd men all thought this is very nice, so they arranged, and then they performed the, they set everything up like Krishna said. They made a huge mountain of rice and covered it with so much ghee, it looked like golden, and then put unlimited pots of sweet rice and other things and all kinds of nice pitas and all kinds of cakes on the hill that looked like boulders, and so many pots of various sabjis and other, you know, wonderful preparations. And then after that, then they made the offering, and then Krishna expanded as Giriraj in a huge form, and he came there and he ate at all the offerings. He was very, very happy with all these things. And then Krishna pointed out to the cowherd men, see, he is so happy with you, he's personally come and now he is accepting your offerings. So he accepted the offerings, they did worship, and then after they fed all the Brahmins, and then they arranged to circumambulate Govardhan. And when they circumambulated in the front, then they had all kinds of singers and musicians playing on various drums and other things, making a nice sound. And all the cows, cowherd boys, and cowherd men went. And then behind them, then another group of, you know, singers with, you know, fine instruments and vocalists and that, and they were singing. And then behind that, then came all the cowherd women, dressed very nicely, riding in there in their bullock carts and their chariots. So like this, they went around Govardhan Hill, and everyone was talking about what a nice festival it was. And, you know, very, very happy in music and singing and everything. And as they went around, they came to the river Jamuna. Jamuna used to flow very near to Govardhan. So they decided, since they're there, to take advantage, take their bath. And it was also the time, Govardhan Puja is also known as Bhratri Dvitiya. And so then this day is when sisters then give, you know, blessings to the brother, that he may, you know, live long and that. So then Krishna's cousin sister, Sunanda, the daughter of Upananda, who's Nanda Baba's eldest brother, then she invited Krishna to sit, and she brought all kinds of nice things and fed him and Madhu Mangal and you know, very nicely, and you know, like this way, sir. And so then Madhu Mangal, that he was saying that this is a good program. You know, Govardhan Puja, we had very nice, we were fed very wonderfully, but it was not as nice as this time, when we were being fed by Krishna's cousin sister. You know, she's feeding so nicely, so many things are there. You know, because it's natural, if there's a small group, you can render service more nicely than if there's a huge group, like this. In the Manu Sanhita, it mentions that you're going to do a function for the benefit of somebody, especially if it's a, you know, somebody who is deceased, then better a small group, you know, three persons or even one person, than hundreds of people not taken care of nicely. You know, better to do a few nicely than hundreds of people not nicely. So here, of course, Govardhan Puja went very nicely, but the point is Madhu Mangal is always looking for an opportunity to get more things to eat. So he was saying that this festival, such a nice festival, we should have it every day. Every day, then, you know, Krishna's sister should come and she should feed us like this. It was very, very nice. So he was very happy and he gave so many nice blessings. Then they continued around the hill. So we see that, and that Krishna himself took this form of this hill. So now this is then makes a very interesting point, is that he's the best devotee at the same time as Krishna. So sometimes a discussion comes up, some say he's Krishna, and others say no, he's the best devotee. But that makes it very difficult if it's one or the other. Because then if we want to take up that concept that it's this or that, then we're in the wrong sampradaya, unfortunately. And we should join, I think, Vishnu Swami's line, which is dwait, advait. It's one, it's two. You can look at it as two, or you can look at it as one. But our sampradaya is achinta veda veda tattva. It means it's simultaneously one and different. Simultaneously he's Krishna and he's Sadashiva. So that is why Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, that actually harmonizes everything that there is in the way of Vaishnava philosophy. Otherwise, then you see so many, you know, one group does not appreciate another group, this, that, but actually Lord Chaitanya's philosophy harmonizes everything. So we see is what it is Krishna himself personally has expanded as Govardhan Hill. Like this. So we see in the various kinds of expansions of the Lord, then there are those that expand that are Him. They're the same as Him. And there are those who expand that are Him, but they take a different form. Like that. So just like Krishna when He dances in the Rasa dance, there's so many Krishnas there, but the same mood is there. So there, even though each one is doing a different activity, dancing in a different way with a different gopi, but still, the mood, the bhav is the same. And at the same time, as we see that another is that when he expands, like Balaram, same potency. There's no difference in potency between Krishna and Balaram. The only Prabhupada says, the only difference is Krishna is white. Balaram, I mean Krishna is black, Balaram's white. That's the only difference. So, but we see his mood has changed something. He becomes very much in the mood of servitor Godhead, and he takes on a whole different taste, whole different rasa. And, you know, so then he is, being the elder brother, then he tastes things in a different way than Krishna. So the two of them together are the complete manifestation of Godhead. Because Krishna is the enjoyer, and Balaram expands as everything else in the cosmic creation. In this way then, you know, Krishna tastes all these different aspects. So then Govardhan then becomes a very unique manifestation of Krishna. And that he's directly Krishna, he's non-different from Krishna, he is Krishna. But because he's expanded, he is also in that mood of servitor, but he didn't change personality, like Balaram. So he's the servitor, like that. Because anything that expands from something else is naturally the servant of what it has expanded from, because it's dependent upon that. Like that's just the natural thing. Without the origin, the expansion doesn't manifest. So you have the generator and you have the electricity. So the electricity is naturally dependent upon the generator. Like that. So anything that expanded from that is naturally dependent. Okay. So then Giriraj is in that way a dependent and a servitor of Krishna. But at the same time it's Krishna in the same mood of Raja Krishna who has taken that form. Therefore you can simultaneously see the mood of Raja Krishna and as the best servant. So this then we see explains why Giriraj is so unique. Because he can give love for Krishna. Krishna doesn't give love for Krishna. Krishna's devotees give love for Krishna. Krishna is, you approach him, then he'll approach you. But here we see that Giriraj, he can give. Giriraj, the dust of Vrindavan, and Jamuna. They can give you prema for Krishna. So this means that he's in that mood of devotee. At the same time, he's Krishna. So it's a very unique position. So Giriraj is very special in this way. Therefore we see all the pastimes happen around this. The gopis are going through and describing so many glories And so in this one verse, they explain the glories of Giriraj. Then we see that that Krishna has manifest this huge form. And then in this huge form, he is eating everything and appreciating all the service. But unfortunately, in this process, Indra is not overly pleased. You know, he is seeing that this big opulent worship that was due to him, now it's not coming to him. It has gone to Govardhan. And, you know, this small 7-year-old boy has changed the mood and the mind of the cowherd men so that they have, you know, taken up this worship. So he's not pleased. So then he calls for his Samvartika cloud servant, and then he comes with his assistants and he tells them that normally they are supposed to destroy the universe, but now you don't have to worry about destroying the universe. You just destroy only this one village, this little village in Vrindavan. So then they are very happy with this assignment, very proud to please Indra, so they step forward. And then they assemble so many clouds. They come together, dark, dark clouds. They're so dark. It's described just like moss. It just covers the sky, and there's no light, no sun. You can't, it just becomes dark. And so many clouds come that from Rasatal all the way up to the heavenly planets, it's all covered in clouds. It's all dark, so no one can see anything. And then from that position, they start raining. And the rain is so thick, it says, as a mature banana tree. So that's quite thick, you know. It's not just coming in little drops, you know. So then the cows, when this rain comes, then they cover their calves with that fold of skin under their necks. You can see on these purebred cows that they have from, I think, Gujarat. There's a few of them in the Goshala. They have that. That's the sign of, you know, the thoroughbred Indian cows. It means it's, let me say, I don't remember what it's called. But in any case, that describes the cow. It means if you say, well, a cow has four legs, you know, it has horns, and, you know, it has a, you know, gives milk. But, you know, buffaloes have horns, so do goats. You know, so many animals have four legs. You know, so many animals give milk, but none of them have that flap of skin. So that's a special thing to the cows. So the cows would put that over the calves, and then they would have to pretty much close their eyes because of the rain, and their skin would, you know, get tight, and everything would stand up. The hair would stand up because it was very cold and windy and rainy. So they were distressed, and the bulls were getting annoyed and upset as the water is coming and hitting their horns and then bouncing onto the hump on their back, and they would look up very angrily at the clouds, but, you know, nothing much could happen. So then the cowherd men, seeing all this, and, you know, this is like water everywhere, they come to Krishna and say that, you know, you protected us in every situation, so now again we have this great calamity. That's just like a huge anarta that we cannot remove from our heart. So you please remove this difficulty. So then Krishna, you know, he was very pleased with their gentle behavior. And so then he said, yes, for the devotees there is no anarta that's a problem. By the process of their bhakti, it's always removed. So then he said, I will now, you know, I say, smash the pride of Indra. And then he picked up Govardhan Hill. Which I hope. So we must remember Govardhan Hill was very big. He has been, every year he gets smaller by one mustard seed, like this. So if we go back, then, you know, he's very big. Originally he was 2 yojanas high, so that means 16 miles high. Now, a very tall mountain, what is that? Everest. It's maybe like about 5 miles. Like that. 5 miles high, or maybe, you know, 5.5 miles high. And then Govardhan was 16 miles high. So Everest is quite small compared to Govardhan. So Krishna picked up Govardhan, and then when he picked him up, then he asked everyone to come inside. He says, don't worry about all your nice, you know, nice pleasure gardens and nice houses and everything there. You just bring your wealth and your family and your cows and everything and come inside. So then everybody came inside, and he said, you see, when I picked up the hill wall, so much dirt fell off the edges of the mountain and it's created a little dam, so no water from outside will come in. And when the residents came inside, then they saw there were all kinds of nice fields of grass and barley and, you know, wonderful places to stay and beautiful gardens, and it was very nice there, you know, and Krishna, Govardhan was giving a nice effulgence, so it was very pleasant inside. And Krishna was standing and holding up Govardhan with his left hand on his little finger. So he said, don't worry, you know, Govardhan is very kind. You have pleased him with your yajna. And so now he is actually just floating in the air. And just, I am the instrument. I am simply, you know, standing here to take part in this. So then they all came inside. And then, while they were inside, then, you know, they all were very... Everyone, no matter where they were, the cows were on the outside eating grass, and then everybody else was then in the center, and then Krishna was in the center of everybody. And it appeared that wherever you were, Krishna was looking at that devotee. So everyone felt that Krishna was just looking at them only. And then they would, because of their affection and their intimacy with Krishna, then they all started, you know, without any shyness, just talking about Krishna, how beautiful he was, how he's standing there. He's standing there, then you can, you know, he's holding up Govardhan Hill, and he's just standing with his right foot over the left, and is, you know, how nice his belt is, and his hair, and, you know, all his beauty, whatever was attracting each of the devotees. So then, discussing all these things, then, and Maru Mangal would come, and he would make all kinds of jokes, you know, he would make, you know, like this, and make Krishna laugh, and everything. But Mother Jashoda was very upset. She was thinking, how is it, my little boy, he's holding up this mountain, see his, you know, hands and feet are becoming reddish from the difficulty, you know, from not eating and doing all this work. He's perspiring and his face is going dry. You know, he needs to eat. And she's complaining that, Maru Mangal, you're just joking about all this stuff. What's going on here? Then Nanda Baba said, no, don't worry. Someone who is expert in diplomacy knows that when somebody is having a difficult time, you should encourage them, you know, make the atmosphere light so that they feel inspired. So he's doing the right thing. Mother Yashoda then is trying to feed Krishna, you know. Krishna's playing his flute with the other hand, and so then she says, you stop playing your flute, you eat something, I'll feed you. And that, and then, you know, the cows aren't eating, you should eat something. Till you eat, they won't eat. So this is going back and forth, till finally then she comes along with offering of pan. So nice, it has cardamom and cinnamon. No, the cardamom, cloves, and nutmeg, and the lime, and this, what's that called? Ketuchu or something? Never know how to pronounce it. It's kind of like a red, also paste, very sweet. And then she convinced Krishna to take that, gave it to Subal, and Subal then fed it to Krishna. And then Mother Yashoda was somewhat pacified that Krishna was at least eating something, you know, like that. So then, like this, then for 7 days, they all were in there, and no one felt any disturbance, no hunger, no thirst, no one was tired. Everyone for 7 days got to just see Krishna and enjoy that interaction with Krishna. Mother Yashoda, the cowherd boys, the gopis also, they were also seeing Krishna. And so then these things went. And then after 7 days, which for the residents of Vrindavan seemed just like 7 hours, for Indra, who was very upset and angry at this whole thing, you know, especially when he came, you know, and saw the situation hadn't changed from what it was before, then he felt that these 7 days were like 7 millenniums. He was very disturbed. So when he came riding on his elephant, he'd already sent the clouds before and figured he would come now and enjoy seeing the devastation. Then he came and out of the top of the Sambartika clouds, Govardhan was poking. Just came out of the top and was just going way beyond. And on the top of the mountain, then, you know, all the different animals, the deers and the birds, were happily moving around and eating their grass and sitting in the trees. And the clouds that he had sent looked like it was they were just surrounding the bottom. So even though they had gone from the lower planets up to the heavenly planets, Govardhan went way past all this. And then it looked like he was an umbrella. It had little, like, the clouds looked like little pearl, a pearl necklace that was around the bottom of the... So he was not overly pleased with the situation. So then he encouraged the clouds more to rain more and more winds and this and that. But nothing happened. Even the animals on the side of the hill, they just kept on eating their grass and they didn't care. And even so much rain fell on Govardhan. Not even one grain of dust, speck of dust, was washed away. So he just remained as he is. So after 7 days, the Sambartika clouds were completely tired because they have to go to the ocean, suck up all the water, bring it there, pour it down there, go back, suck up. They were very tired. They were almost ready to die. Indra was so frustrated and so angry, he just became completely blind. He couldn't see anything. He was so upset. And so after this, then the clouds, they dispersed, and the sun came out again. Everything became nice after, you know, 1 week of not shining, and the sun again came back out. And everything went back, all the water went back to the rivers, and the rivers went back to the ocean, and everything became peaceful. So Krishna told everyone, see, now it's nice, the mud has dried up, so now everyone can go. So then the cowherd men took the cows, they all went out. And then they all got outside. When the cows saw Krishna was still inside, they all again ran back inside. Like that. But, you know, Krishna can't put down the hill. So then with his eyebrows, and he motioned that the cows should leave. So then they again went back out. And Krishna came, put Govardhan down in exactly the same place it was. And then they all went back to their places in Vrindavan. So then, after a few days, then Krishna went on Govardhan. You know, he went away from the cowherd boys and went off alone, like that. Even though it was very difficult for the cowherd boys, then he knew that Indra, being so proud, would not be able to face anyone else. So he gave the opportunity that he just came alone. So that then he came along with Surabhi, Indra, because Surabhi was going to see Krishna because she was very happy because Krishna had protected all the cows. And taking the opportunity, Indra thought, well, if I go with Surabhi, maybe, you know, I will get somewhere here. So he came, they came, and Surabhi then was offering prayers and thanks to Krishna. And Krishna was just completely ignoring Indra, who was standing there feeling very bad. And then after she had offered her prayers, then she said that, you know, this Indra, he's feeling very bad within his mind. He's always rebuking himself. And he's feeling very humbled. So you should accept his, you know, apologies. So then Indra offered prayers. And then after all the demigods came, Lord Brahma and Shiva, and the whole universe came. And so then they had a huge Abhishek ceremony. And everyone in the universe brought something. You know, Varuna brought an umbrella. Earth provided all kinds of nice things. Surabhi gave all the Panchagavya. And different persons came and did everything. And then after everything was set up, then I think Balaram then instructed that, okay, then all the, you know, chaste ladies of the main of the universe, Anasuya and Parvati, like this, they should come forward, Aditi, and bathe Krishna, and then all the other demigods came and bathed and all this. And then when all the bathing was finished, they dried him nicely, ornamented him with so many nice things. And then Brahma prepared the offerings, performed all the offerings. And then Lord Shiva came and nicely took a bath in Manasi Ganga and left, you know, all his, you know, snakes and washed off all the ashes and everything. And then he came and offered the arti. And then after that, then everyone was pleased, offered their prayers, they went back to the heavenly planets. And then Sarabhi and Indra stayed back a few moments, and then Krishna told them that, because you were proud, therefore I did this. It means my devotee I do not tolerate when they are proud. When they are proud, then I must correct that. Because otherwise, if they're proud, they don't please me. If they don't please me, they will not be happy. So therefore, he did like this. So Indra was feeling very sorry. He was wiping the tears from his 1,000 eyes. Like this. You know, so then, you know, he understood like this. So then he and Sarabhi left, and then Krishna then walked back, you know, in his nice, you know, nice clothes and everything that the demigods had given. He went back to where the cowherd boys were, and again took up playing with them and everything, just like an ordinary cowherd boy. So this is, you know, it's a very special day, Govardhan. Giriraj, if we take shelter of him, we pray to him, he can give us love for Krishna in that mood of Krishna in Vrindavan. So it's a very special day, very nice day. We should all take advantage and get the blessings of Giriraj Maharaj. Giri Govardhana ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Any questions or anything?
During today morning, we put for the book another chapter. Can you just tell a story that's short and when Krishna picked up the Govardhan and made so much noise?
Oh yeah, that's right. It means when he picked up Govardhan Hill, it made so much noise. Like Govardhan himself made the noise, and it sounded like it, when you have a huge amount of wild kids in a cave, and they all are shouting and yelling and screaming like that. But the sound was so great that it filled the whole universe. And a wager was made on whether, you know, by the sound itself, that it could break the meditation of Lord Brahma. And so it won the wager. And then it also had the boldness to go down. Kavi Karnapur says they had the boldness to go down even to Patal and disturb the Madhavi wine drinking festival of the old ladies on the hellish planets. Like that. So I guess he was very, you know, Giriraj is having a good time. And then as they lifted up the mountain and all the lions that live on top of Govardhan, they saw these dark clouds and thought that they were elephants, so they started with their claws ripping him to pieces, and all the clouds were going this way and that way. And then Govardhan poked out the top. Like that.
Sometimes lower caste kings used to establish a hybrid.
Yeah.
See exactly what this higher principle is. I mean, how is it being established?
The higher principle is that you worship Krishna, then everything becomes taken care of. You don't have to go to the demigods. Because the demigod is only doing what he has to do. So actually, he's doing what is Krishna's order. So Krishna's told him, when someone does this activity, give this result. So they're only carrying out that work.
Could we consciously, they're aware that because Krishna is free, that's why they do it?
No, they just love Krishna so much. That's not the important thing. Even if they know, it doesn't matter. Just like, does the mother have any different affection for the child if he's, you know, the president of, you know, the country or not? It doesn't affect. Yeah, it's a nice thing, you can talk with friends. You know, amongst the friends it's a big thing. But with the child, there's no difference. Like that. She doesn't care. You know, so it's the same principle. It's that affection goes beyond that. See, is that if the affection is like you have no affection for somebody, and you know you may not be so trained, then somebody comes along, you may not deal with them nicely, unless it's obvious they're a big person. But otherwise, you won't. You just kind of be neutral or, you know, ignore them. Then if you find out they're a big person, oh, then immediately, oh, how is that? So that's, you know, it means there's some little more levels. You're respecting because of that. But that's actually not a very high platform. You know, it's not actually based really on a deep sense of love. But here is Krishna himself. His beauty is so nice, his pastimes, you know, his flute, his, all these things are so beautiful. That's why they like him. He can be God, he cannot be God. Who cares? So it's a totally different approach. That's why the Braja Bhakti is unique. At all the other levels, they know he's God. So we see in Dwarka and Mathura, they know he's God, but at the same time, they have great affection. So it's kind of like half and half. So they know he's God, so that's there. At the same time, they can be quite intimate with him. Formal, but intimate. It means according to the rules, but intimate. But then when you get into Vaikuntha, then he's God. That's the prominent feature. Because he's God, therefore, they're having such great affection for him. So it's just a deeper affection. Does that make sense?
Other examples which are lower philosophy which is
tradition. Well, we always just like we use logic to establish a point. Logic is nyaya. So that's one of the lowest of the philosophies. Nyaya is the point of nyaya is we use it as a tool. We neglect the conclusion. The conclusion is life comes from atoms. It's what the scientists say nowadays. So they just get in there and logically look at things and this and that and put things together in this way. So we use that also, logically establish a point. But we leave the conclusion. So the same way as we use the tools of these other things, but we leave their conclusion. Right? We only start as a tool in that, and then when it's time for conclusion, we put our conclusion. So that's the normal things, you know. Why you don't kill a mosquito with a cannon, you know. So if you have a small thing, you use a small tool like that. So higher than karma mimamsa is uttara mimamsa, which is Vedanta. And then within Vedanta, then Vaishnava understanding is the higher. And of that, then we see the Lord Chaitanya as the Chintaveda Tattva. That is the most...
Anything
else?
Yes. Yeah. We sing Radha Giridhari. We sing Radha Giridhari, Radha Giridhari. So what's role of Srimati Radharani in this pastime?
What is?
Role of Srimati Radharani in this pastime, we sing Radha
Giridhari. Oh, you see, Giridhari means one who's lifted Govardhan Hill. So they're also all there. In the past, means all the gopis are also there, and so then they're all, you know, smiling and glancing at Krishna and this and that. But it does create a disturbance because when Krishna looks at them, then he has trouble holding up the hill. That's a problem. But they're all there, like that. So they make jokes amongst themselves also. So everybody's enjoying the whole pastime. The gopis amongst themselves, the cowherd boys, you know, the parents. Even at one time, then all the cowherd men think that Krishna is getting tired, so they take their sticks and they put them up to hold up Govardhan Hill, like that. You know, and when everybody's getting too much anxiety, then Madhu Mangal, he just says, "Don't worry about it. Actually, Krishna's not doing anything. I'm holding it up by my brahminical power." So you just take advantage of, you know, Krishna's just having a good time. So you should enjoy this. Okay. Yes.
What about Radha Damodara?
Radha?
Damodara.
Damodara.
Yeah, what is her role
there? Means Damodara, basically the principle is that you're being bound by love. That is the main thing, is that Mother Yashoda means you can't catch Krishna, because means if you want to catch Krishna, you have to use something of the creation. So that means it's less than the creation. So you can't put something less than the creation around the whole creation. That's the principle. That's why Mother Yashoda, no matter how many ropes she brings, and you tie them together, one rope is this much short, two fingers short. Right? So then it means this width. That's not a whole lot short. But so she couldn't tie. So then she puts another huge rope and it's still that much short. That's because you can't catch Krishna by any other means. But because of her devotion, then Krishna allows himself to be caught. He's the Supreme Lord, so no one can catch him. But because of this devotion of Mother Yashoda, then he is able to be bound. So he is controlled by the love of his devotees. So Radha Damodar means that Krishna, Radha and Krishna, that Krishna is that mood of when he is able to be bound by the love of the devotees. That is the... Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, one story about this. When Yashoda wanted to tie Krishna, then all the Vrishabhasis came and was laughing and saying that it's impossible, and he was helping actually her, giving all the strings, and then she's tying. And finally, he got all the strings of Vrindavan, and he's still short. So then the last string what he got was Radhani's string, but she's tying it with her hair, tying to her hair with a string, and she gave the string, and with that they can tie it.
That's interesting. Also, I think at the end someone was saying, complaining that Krishna's tied up, and they told Nanda Baba to untie him. He says, I can't untie him. Mother Yashoda tied him with her love, so I can't untie that. Like that, she has to untie it herself. That's interesting. Yeah, because in this pastime, then Krishna makes the point to Madhu Mangal. Because he's made the point about how him looking at her, then he's become agitated and is finding difficulty holding up the hills. So then Krishna makes the point that actually Radharani is just another form of myself, like that. Is that I'm one form, she's the other form. So being the Sarup Shakti means whatever there is in Krishna, as he expands, Radharani has the matching. I can never remember the word. Not compatible. Not combined. And it just means it goes with it. The two go together. But whatever she is able to, whatever Krishna has, she has the same aspect. So therefore, she can get around Krishna. Because however much he expands, she's also, while other devotees are all expanding from her, so they'll always be short. So by her grace, then one can catch Krishna. That's why we worship Radha and Krishna. Right? You see, even those who are in parental rasa, like the Vallabhas, they also worship Radha and Krishna. Because without Radharani, you're not going. But they see Radharani as Krishna's wife. Like that. So they're not, they don't get, the conjugal pastimes, that's his business. Right? Like that. It's just like the parents, do they have a good parental affection for the son? He may have a wife and they know he has that kind of relationship. But that's not of their concern. Like that. So therefore, we see is that they see like that. So even these other rasas worship Radha.
Okay.
It means that she can do it. No problem. Okay, anything else?
Did you say that Govardhan is Krishna himself in the same bhava?
Same mood. Same mood, and means it's Krishna. He hasn't changed into another form. At the same time, he's servant. So it's like some very unique position. Right? It's still Braja Krishna. Because right? Balaram then takes a different mood. At the same time, he has that mix of servitorship because he's expanded from Krishna. But that's what he's saying. It's a unique mix. It's something very special. Like that means that. Like that. Very unique. Excuse me. That's why it's like we have to always be careful. We have to be able to acknowledge that there's going to be things that are incomprehensible. Because if everything has come from Krishna, there's so many things we see in this world that are contradictory. Right? We see good and bad. But they both came from Krishna. Understand? So when you get back to the root, there's no contradiction. But if we want to say, no, but then how is the bad can be there? No. If there's good, there has to be bad. If there's light, there has to be darkness. Right? If there's eternality, there must be temporary. Otherwise, then it's not complete. God means everything. Right? But it's on the platform of affection that he interacts with the devotees. And for the non-devotees, then they get all the temporary and bad and all those things that are also part of the manifestation of God. Right? So there's no contradiction in him. So this is the difficulty if when we try to take it. We only separate the things for study. That's called vyapti. And vyapti, where you break it up, I think it's called vyapti. Then, after you understand it, then you have to put it back together. That's samas. That's why many times as we get something in the philosophy or, you know, in the culture that's been separated off to make us understand something, then we apply it separated and it doesn't work. Right? You'll generally see any social anomaly that is there that, you know, we experience is because of that. Either a misunderstanding of the point or misapplying the point without the culture. You know? It means is that you break all this up, but then you put it all together and then you understand? So it has its position just like Krishna's God. Okay, we spend a lot of time establishing that, but once it's accepted, the reason we do that is because we think we're the enjoyer and controller. So we have to establish that, no, Krishna's that. Then we accept that, then we can take up the mood of I am servant, and then we can start talking about Krishna and Vrindavan and affection and all those things. But otherwise, if we don't talk about him as God and clear this from the heart through sadhana bhakti and vaidhi and all these things, the philosophy, then our approach to Vrindavan will make the same mistake that got us here. We will want to enjoy what's there. If in our heart is the enjoying mood doesn't distinguish between matter and spirit. Right? You understand? It doesn't distinguish. Did Ravana distinguish? Did Ravana come along and see Sita and go, oh, here is a spiritual transcendental personality. Therefore, I should not try to materially enjoy them. Right? I'll stick to the other women of the universe. No, he immediately grabs. That's because in the heart is the enjoying mood. Right? So he's considered the, you know, great demon. Why? Because he's trying to take. So we should understand this. Some will just say, no, you just read all these things, it'll go away. But what's going to make the enjoying mood? That may attract us to some degree, but if in the process of while we're being attracted, we want to enjoy the gopis, then what is that? Better you don't go near. That's the point. Is if you're going to get in an enjoying mood over enjoying the gopis, are enjoying Krishna, then, you know, Pujya wants to enjoy Krishna. But she's not in Vrindavan. She's in Mathura. Right? She's the Purusha Shakti. So it's Shakti, but in the mood of Purusha. So she wants to enjoy Krishna. Right? But we see so that has to be given up. So that's given up by understanding we're not God. That our heart is full of nonsense. At the same time, simultaneously, we hear these wonderful pastimes that attract the mind. But we have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, we'll take the mind and enjoy all that. That's how we started. We wanted to enjoy that. We became envious of Krishna. So Krishna's not going to tolerate that his devotees are exploited like this. And neither is the devotees. They have better things to do. So therefore, then the shadow is given. Immediately one becomes bahirmukh and one's face is turned to see the shadow. You know, just like you have the tree and you want to enjoy that tree, immediately the face is turned to see the tree in the water and you don't know the difference. So therefore, and then you go and try to enjoy there. Because you saw Krishna enjoy it, had substance, there was something there. So then you keep on going, yes, I can enjoy this. It's only after a long time you get frustrated and think, well, maybe I can enjoy it. But we don't give up wanting to be God. You know, then I'll be merged in the Brahman. You know. We just don't look at the material world, but we don't look at Krishna. So that has to go. That's why we have to establish that we're Krishna's God, we're servant. And in the service mood, that's the natural position of living entity, then the love can manifest. So that's why both have to go on. The problem, Niyamagraha, means that one just takes the rules and that's going to give me prema. No, it's the pleasing Krishna through following those rules. That will allow it. Right? Or others say, we don't need these rules. We just take all the nectar. But then they go into the nectar with a heart of poison. So you can put so much nectar. It's just like if you have a glass and it's full of ink and you start pouring milk. You can pour a lot of milk and you can still find some ink in there because you haven't taken out the. So you can pour so much, and maybe eventually, after, you know, so many liters and liters and liters like that. But if you just take the glass, throw out the ink, rinse it out, put it down, you pour in one glass of milk, it's pure. So it doesn't take oceans. It just takes that much, a glass. So that's all. The gopis don't need oceans of experience to love Krishna. They just see him once. They don't even see him. They just hear about him. They already love him. So that's why both of these aspects are there. The sweetness is there. Same time the philosophy is there. You have to cut our attachments to material at the same time as develop the sweetness for Krishna. So if we can do that quickly, nice. If we can't, we find it's very difficult to pull out those attachments. Then we have to use those attachments for Krishna. In reality, not just lip service. It means we say, my house is Krishna's, my wealth is Krishna's, then we have to see it. In your house, do you conduct and live in your house as Krishna would want you to? Or you live in there how you want to live? If you live how you want to live, then that means it's not Krishna's house, it's your house. And when you like occasionally, you use it for Krishna. So that's the difference. If your consideration is Krishna likes it clean, he likes it like this, not too much nonsense, we should behave properly, we should, you know, the activities we do in the house should be proper, then it's Krishna's house. Then you make advancement very nicely. And if not, just occasionally use it as Krishna's house. Then for those moments you make advancement, but otherwise you don't. You live in the house so you like, well, what advancement you'll make at those moments? You're not Krishna conscious. You're not making an offering to Krishna. You understand? So to say is one thing, to do is another. You know, my wealth is for Krishna. Are you spending it how Krishna would like you to spend it? That doesn't mean you have to just come and drop it all in the donation box. Like that. It means, but are you maintaining your family the way they should be maintained? You know? Are you taking care of them how they should be? Or it's some other way. How we like. Then that means then the money all is not Krishna. Part of it's Krishna's. Whatever those moments you're Krishna, you give, then it's Krishna's. Otherwise it's not Krishna's. Because it's Krishna's doesn't mean you don't have it, like the treasure. He has all the temple money. It's all Krishna's money. So does that mean he takes it home, or does that mean he doesn't touch it? No. He uses it for Krishna. Someone may have money. They may be, entrusted with that money to see it's used for Krishna's service. But that's the point. It must be used for Krishna's service. Just saying it's for Krishna isn't enough. It's a step. It's better than saying it's all mine, like, you know, Hiranyakashipu. You know? That's that one. Ahambogi, out of the Gita. It's better than that. But it's still cheap. You know, it's easy to say. You know, it takes a little more practice to do it. So like that, one has to see the reality. You know, it's great, sit down, read so many things about the gopis, this and that. You know, and then afterwards, you know, put on your karmi clothes, get in the car and drive down to the local karmi pizzeria for pizza with your family. You know, it's nice, you know, you spent a little time reading, but now what about these other aspects? You know, and then just saying, oh, well, you know, we're above all these things. We're above, then don't go. It's like the smoker saying, I am free, you guys are bound. You can't smoke, but I have the freedom to smoke. Actually, no. We have the freedom to smoke, but we don't. But the smoker does not have the freedom to not smoke. Just say, okay, you have the freedom, just for 6 months, don't smoke. Then you go back to your smoking. We don't care. Let's see. No, you can't go one day without smoking. You know, okay, 2-3 days. Then their body will, you know, the nicotine, all that goes down, and they can't. So not free. No. Freedom is not our definition, right? Freedom already has a definition. So freedom, when one's free from the material desire, control of material desire, that's freedom. And therefore then taking care of material desires according to the rule, when it's appropriate, that is freedom. That's why it's called the regulative principles of freedom. Freedom not following the regular principles is never called freedom. You know, like nowadays, you know, everybody wants to be free, but you know, you have a big country, you make it into small countries, still they're bound by the material laws. Because they're not following Dharma. Like that. One group of persons, another group of persons frees themselves from the certain social positions they're in, but still they're bound by the mental nature. And so unless one follows Krishna's direction, one doesn't become free. What is actual freedom for the Western mind is bondage. Because for the Western mind, the mode of goodness is the worst situation you could possibly have. You know? Like that. It's good for a moment. Just it clears the mind of anxieties, so that it can immediately fill up with all kinds of nice, lusty feelings. Right? That's the only use of mode of goodness. Hard day at the office, or this, anxiety. Then you go down to the, you know, beachfront, or someplace, sit on the bench, watch the sunset. The mind clears out, and so that you can fill it up with all kinds of lusty feelings. You know, and then go out and then enjoy yourself. And then that right back into the same mess. They don't stay out in the forest, right? They stay in the forest? No, they go out to the restaurant, they go here, they go. They don't stay there. Right? You understand? It's just, so, therefore, that's the difficulty, is that the actual duties are based on goodness. And goodness takes a while to get the taste for it. Once you have it, it's a stronger taste than passion or ignorance. It's a higher, refined. But the problem comes is the Western mind doesn't want to wait for it. You know, everything must be instant. You just add a little water and, you know, you have it. So, but unfortunately, the material world works how it wants to work, despite how we think it should work. Like that. So therefore, it doesn't work. That makes sense. So that's why in here that all these aspects must be there. We must see, we must do those activities that develop a taste for Krishna consciousness, the hearing, chanting, associating, and all these nice, sweet things. At the same time as we must also understand we're not this body. Otherwise we do so many nice, sweet things, and it's a wonderful day, then we go home and then we find out some kind of calamity happened, or you know, somebody's making some politics or that, then our whole day's ruined. Why? Because we're attached. So the philosophy and all that, that's what gets rid of that attachment. Is that, yeah. Because otherwise, when we're materially attached, then the tendency is when we get in the problem with that attachment, we forget about Krishna. We get upset. Because of our pride and our faith that the material thing will give us happiness. So as soon as we don't have that mood that material life will give us happiness, and we're in the mood of servant, then when a problem comes up, we just think of Krishna. The Pandavas, they had trouble. They just think of Draupadi. You can't get a worse situation for a woman. She just thinks of Krishna. She doesn't get angry, this, that, and why all this is going. No, she just thinks of Krishna. So that's why all these things must be there. One has to practice both. Vidyam cha, vidyam cha. You have to study both. That's the order of the Shruti. What is vidya and what is avidya? You must study both. So in the Upanishads, avidya means anything material. You know, even Veda or things like astrology or ritual. This is all material. Rich things used in the Lord's service. That's in the, according to Upanishads, is called avidya, because it's only for transcendental. So you have transcendence and then everything else. That's the rule. That's what's there. And then the Smriti Shastras, then they will give transcendental knowledge, dovetailed knowledge, and then undovetailed knowledge. That's called avidya, just ordinary mundane knowledge. So they give you a step in between. The Upanishads don't. It's transcendental or it's nonsense. So it's saying there is that nonsense must be studied. You must understand why it's nonsense, how it's nonsense, how we have nothing to do with this nonsense and don't want anything to do with this nonsense. And if we do have attraction for the nonsense, then we have to study it and find out why. Otherwise it'll grow. You have a weed. You don't do anything, it'll grow. You have to study the weed, figure it out. It's a weed, make sure you can tell the difference between it and the creeper, and then pull it out. It takes study and it takes endeavor. It's not going to just go away. It's not like the ostrich. You just put your head in the sand, it'll go away. No, you have to work. That makes sense. Anything else? No? Okay. So, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Giriraj Dharan ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaimita Gaurudhuri ki.
Ananda Vrindavan Chakra.
respectable hand, the left hand is not. You know, you use it for not so good things. So therefore, to hold it with the left hand means that it's not. And generally, your right hand is not strong. You use that. Most people are right-handed. So left hand is considered the inferior hand. So to use the inferior hand, then that's already showing that it's not a big deal. And then of that, you're only using the inferior finger. You know, so that just, it's like insult to injury. You know, you've already insulted it by that. And then it's just like when the demigods threw their weapons at Dhritarasura. He didn't bother to catch them. He just opened his mouth and yawned, you know. He didn't open it and just swallow them like that. He just opened his mouth yawning. It's so boring, but they're going to end to swallow it. That's it. There's no more weapons. And then Indra came and threw his club, and he caught it with his left hand. It was just so easy. And with his left hand, he threw it back at him. You know? And so in this way, it's a thing of when someone's too arrogant, then they'll be used. If there was a proper challenge, even if you could catch it, you wouldn't, because of the respect for the other person. But here, Indra's not acting according to the traditional sense. You know, like that. So therefore, you know, it doesn't deserve. He's not on an equal footing. He just is in a mood of just being evenness, you know, neutrality. Then Krishna is dealing with it. He's not even getting angry. It's not even worth it. Anger then shows that there's some, you've done something, there's some equality. You don't get angry. It's not even worth it. So therefore, there's no rasa. Indra can't enjoy the rasa of anger because the other person become angry. He just nothing.
We're just thinking that
Govardhan
is still respectable.
No, but it's himself.
Huh?
It's himself.
Yeah, it's himself.
It's just like you take bath, you rub yourself with left hand. It's not. It's just. It's Govardhan's.